What's the best movie you've recently seen? You're a movie man. You see a lot of stuff before it even gets released.
Yeah, I do see a lot. The best thing I saw recently... You know, nothing. There's nothing but nothing.
Did you get a chance to see Inglourious Bastards? Was that any good?
I did see that.
Was it good? Sucks?
I heard it's not very good.
It's not that it sucks. It's just that it's very... I had read it a while ago, and it's...
I read it too.
If you like Death Proof, which I'm not really a fan of because it's just a bunch of talking and very little action, it's the same thing. There's a couple great action scenes and there's some great twists at the end, but
I heard the guy that plays the Nazi guy and is really good.
Yeah, you know he is. I mean, it's great performances. Typical Tarantino. It's great acting, great dialogue, but so much of it's just people standing around talking, and there's so much exposition and so much needless dialogue. And not much really happens. That's the problem with the movie. It's just over long. Well, it's not really that long. It feels long. You can get all these screenplays as soon as they come out on a certain website that has like, all
I would rather watch a movie than read the book first.
Yeah, but most of the scripts
they don't get made.
They don't get made. So there'll be these incredibly great pieces that just don't.
As a writer, I'd rather not know those and then end up writing a version very similar to something like that that does get.
Yeah.
You know, you read too much, eventually you don't have anything new to contribute because you realize that everyone else has already.
I think so, but in terms of like if you're looking to write for Hollywood, there's a very specific.
No, yeah. I know the formulas and stuff. I understand all of that, but yeah. Golly. So, Last Boy Scout. Just watched The Last Boy Scout. I speaking of Hollywood royalty, on and so forth. At
Damon Wayans.
Early 90s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hollywood royalty.
Bruce Willis back when he was playing. Halle
Berry.
Just dingy and everything. Halle Berry getting machine gunned. Tony Scott.
Nudity with Halle Berry. It's another pet peeve.
And yeah,
show a stripper scene with
they
no
had
nudity? Pasties,
but it was all blown back, which led me to believe that it was a body double.
It bugs me.
Why use a body double if you're not even going to show nipples?
Yeah.
Because maybe your breasts aren't that great. Right?
Let me know. Tell me. Yeah.
Shane Black wrote it and then kind of disappeared until...
It's the most tedious Shane Black film, really.
You find it tedious?
The dialogue.
There's some funny lines.
Constant, but it's to the point of it being annoying.
Okay.
There's some funny stuff. But most of it's like just everything so acerbic. Like someone says anything and there's an acerbic response every single time.
So sarcastic. Well, I almost think that movies like Last Boy Scout and movies like Knocked Up have a certain thing in common that they're almost more of a communal experience because if you actually, I couldn't imagine watching Last Boy Scout
alone. Yeah. You'd
and
be bored.
Same with Knocked, but like I've tried to watch. I watched Knocked Up in a theater and laughed my ass off. But then when I watched it alone, I'm like, these jokes aren't that funny. So I think it's just certain movies.
Yeah. With comedy especially, it can be the way. Unless it's a really good bit of comedy. Like, you know, you can watch a Futurama episode and laugh at the funny parts because it's overwhelmingly
good
funny.
Good comedy's good.
Yeah.
But mediocre comedy, you can get sucked in with the audience, I guess, sometimes.
I think that pound for pound, that Long Kiss Goodnight is probably a better film.
Yeah, you know, it just kind of didn't hit right. And Gina Davis.
Let's be serious. Rennie Harlan is one of the greatest directors
of bad movies.
Of bad movies. Who's
absolutely. But what was the last movie he did?
He did 12 Rounds, which was horrendously awful.
Why anyone gives him
money? The bad guy in 12 Rounds was this guy who looked kind of like Wayne Coyne.
Yeah.
But wasn't, and he was like pseudo Irish.
Yeah.
He kind of had his Irish accent.
But didn't he look like the guy from Passenger 57, kind of?
He looked more like Wayne Coyne.
Okay. Who's that? I don't know Wayne Coyne.
The singer of Flaming Lips.
Oh, okay.
I actually just read a script that you might mention. It's about Steven Seagal and Van Damme teaming up.
Oh, my God. To fight the Expendables?
It's a buddy action movie with Seagal and Van Damme.
Oh, have you read that? Expendables? Is that going to be as good as I hope it will be?
I know. It's a Stallone movie.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward to that.
There's a funny video of Van Damme dance, if you go on YouTube, where he's dancing with a girl on a talk show and he gets a hard-on.
I've seen that,
Of course you've seen that.
I don't know where I saw that. It was on TV.
I don't know where you saw it. You looked it
the
up.
The Expendables, yeah. Well, that was the big controversy that Schwarzenegger was supposed to do.
Well, it wasn't just him. It was that a whole bunch of people, they got so many of the big people so quick that then when a couple of the new ones they had suggested backed out, for instance,
Van Damme
and Seagal, and a couple others
have now turned it down.
And so it's kind of like lost steam now that they know that. It was all like they signed all the B-listers to try to get the old A-listers to join up too, and most of the old A-listers like, you know, I have a little more dignity to that, which is sad because, like, honestly, Jason Statham has made more money than any of those guys. He was like the first, he's like, I'll do anything.
That would have, I mean, to me, show me where to sign. Seagal does direct to video movies that are progressively lower in budget and quality. And what is Van Damme? I mean, Van Damme made a movie.
He did the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, which is
JCVD,
like,
but it's not going to
making fun of him.
Exactly. It's not. That's like. Even though it's supposed to be a pretty good film, it's kind of like The Surreal Life's a pretty funny show. I don't think it's going to help any of the people on the show at making fun of yourself.
Right.
So you know.
So yeah, he doesn't all of a sudden have dramatic credibility because
he plays himself, a caricature of himself. So
what's Shane Black doing now?
You know, he's supposed to be writing something, but he's very excited.
Hasn't he been working on a new Lethal Weapon for a while?
That was killed. You know, what happened with Lethal Weapon
Gibson wasn't
5, Mel Gibson didn't want to do it, so that they killed it. And, well, they were going to hire back Richard Donner. I think that was the reason.
That was it.
Mel Gibson had some loyalty to Richard Donner. So they didn't, it's dead. It's not going to go. And also, Mad Max, which was supposed to go, is not going to go either. Mel Gibson's kind of a, you know, like Shane Black, they're both difficult to work with. Shane Black is just... Even though his movies seem like such kind of lowbrow fun, the guy is like he takes it very seriously. So he might spend 4 years on a screenplay.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was definitely the work of somebody who was extremely
that's
like
I've only seen it once, but I'd like to see it.
Really enjoyable. That was actually one of the movies that there's a couple movies that there was that movie I was genuinely surprised by, and also Spartan.
Mammoth. How would you be surprised by Mammoth?
Because
I'm never positively
it's more action.
Exactly.
I always expect great things.
Here's the thing. Whenever I do expect great things, but I'm always whenever I hear the premise, I'm always like, oh, that's good, you know.
His
stories
are
compelling.
Is in there somewhere,
and
then it's a good Mammoth.
Yeah, they're always they're just interesting.
Ricky J.
Red Belt. You know,
he's not in that one, is he?
Yeah. I don't think Ricky J.
But, you need to be watching The Unit, though, with Mammoth all over the place.
You want to watch Your Unit? You want to watch Your Unit?
But Last Boy Scout...
you know it.
Tony Scott... and this is one thing I always wonder about the guy. If you watch his movies now, as stylistic as Last Boy Scout is, it's nothing compared to...
Man on Fire,
Domino. It's like something like a guy having a seizure. Uh-huh.
Last Boy Scout was directed when he was still in his Beverly Hills
Cop
2
phase.
Yeah.
Where he just, like, loaded it with filter.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've talked to a bunch of people
who
worked on post on a lot of his movies, and they'll shoot 35mm cameras, 16mm cameras, video. He mixes every format.
Domino is the biggest piece of trash I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
They have all those in there.
And
like,
you know, and it's weird because I just saw his recent one. It was Denzel Washington. Deja Vu.
Is that the most recent?
Well,
Tony
he actually did the train. And he actually did.
Oh yeah, you're right. He did
the taking a pen.
Pelham 1-2-3.
Yeah.
We did that on a podcast.
And I thought that he was more.
He was more reserved.
He was more reserved in that one.
Yeah.
But it still wasn't a good movie.
Yeah.
When the original was great.
The original was really good.
Yeah. I actually saw that on the big screen a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
Interesting. Yeah.
Was that Patton Oswalt?
No, it was this theater, the New Beverly. Though they have, I don't think Patton Oswalt might have.
Doesn't he? Well, I remember reading recently that before this remake had even kind of like the hit steam that it was happening.
Oh yeah, no, right.
Read something about how Patton Oswalt
does
the thing where he programs.
Yeah, that was
actually
probably more like a couple months ago.
And he has programmed whole blocks of Walter Matthau movies.
Yeah, it was this other movie, that Walter Matthau movie called Johnny.
That was all Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, okay.
I was reading that.
Because Patton Oswalt, like, if you want to... There's this theater in Los Angeles where if you go there, you'll see filmmakers like Tarantino, Edgar Wright. You'll see writers like Diablo Cody, and they always hang out there. Mm-hmm. And so he's, you know, Joe Dante is always there.
The Joe Dante.
Tommy Wiseau of The Room. You'll see George Lucas, Robert Zemeckis.
Lucas actually gets out of Carmel.
You'll see David Lean stops by.
Yeah, I'm sure David Lean shows up. Posthumously, huh?
You'll see Seth B. DeMille stops by.
Richard Attenborough shows up.
No, but in terms of just hipster filmmakers, it's a great theater. You can bring beer in. And
sure, Zach would love it.
It used to be a porn theater. So
this is the New Beverly, is what it's called?
The
floor's kind of sticky.
The floors are kind of sticky. They have raffles and they give out the old porn that was from the theater.
Oh, really?
They show every movie you ever wanted to see, like what we're watching now, they would show that on the big screen. I saw Fright Night there recently.
Awesome. Incidentally, yeah, tomorrow night at the Arcata, at the actual theater, they're playing A Boy and His Dog.
That's interesting. Weird. Yeah. I just watched it.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're going to hipsterify it. They'll probably have, it's A Boy's Dog with experimental guys playing fucking milk crates.
You and bongos.
No, that's how it is. Trust me, I went to HSU film school for a couple years. I got sick of it. I got burned out of everything being experimental documentary found footage.
I'm a film minor. I think I know a little bit about it.
Maybe you do. I have a biology degree. I guess you're right.
It reminds me of Matthew McConaughey being caught naked in a room playing bongos. Yeah.
Now back to Last Boy Scout. Let's plot through this here.
I think that's a solid plot. It's one of those. What I actually like now, and
it's a hard-boiled detective.
I love those contrived '90s action plots that tried to be bigger than they were, but when you really stopped and scratched your head and thought about it, you're like, oh,
they always come
down
to something dumb where it's like,
oh, it's a gambling.
There was $6 billion on the line. You see why I had to do it, right? And they're like, you sick bastard! And then there's a shootout.
It's all the things that they now make fun of in self-reflexive action movies.
Because
we couldn't have these new movies if it wasn't for those old movies. And I prefer the old ones. I prefer the old ones because I love those old movies, like Commando.
Oh yeah,
it's just the whole this really politically incorrect.
It was a coup.
If you were to say fag in a movie nowadays, it's controversial.
Yeah.
Back in those days, it was like the movies being made
fag in those movies,
made by a bunch of homophobic, misogynistic guys, like good old boys.
Back in the good days, right?
the good old days. The days that you're in for, man. Well, no, it's always funny to hear political incorrectness, you know, just to...
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's always funny is actually to read that stuff in... You can find it in fucking everything.
I think the most brilliant thing about Last Boy Scout, and it kills me every time, is that who picked... Like, they cast Taylor Negron as the bad guy. I mean, he's not the bad guy, but he's really like...
He's the main... Dichotomy
of the bad guys in action films goes... You got some guy behind the money, and then there's the guy who's the killer. Those two, and usually the killer answers to the money. Like in Under Siege 2, I've always complained that he kills them in the wrong order.
Yeah,
he goes after the guy from
Silver Bullet.
Yeah, he gets him out of the way quick, and then Eric Bogosian, who couldn't beat up a fourth grade girl, is the guy, last guy.
But you'll notice in all those movies that... The money guy always can fight. Have you noticed
that? Yeah, generally he can fight a little bit.
Yeah, he's
just devious enough that he knows how to. Yeah. He knows how to grab some woman and hold her hostage for the last few seconds before the hero straightens his shooting hand.
It's interesting, you know.
Taylor Negron is just great.
Bloated.
It was definitely. It's a memorable character. You go away from Last Boy Scout and you're like, okay, I remember that, and the
Bruce
helicopter.
Willis is a little much in it, I think. I think that's really him at his most, squinty-eyed, sighing, sarcastic. You know, like, in Die Hard, it's one thing because in the Die Hard films, he really was, like, he all... In the first...
They were separating the New York cop from the L.A., whatever.
Yeah, but in the first two, he showed... He always had a look on his face, like, you could tell he was scared. Even though he was standing up to the occasion, it was not an ideal situation for him.
But then
by the time the third one came around, he was just kind of like, he started to have the hardened look on his face, like, you know, I've done this so many times, this is old hat for me, and then I'll do whatever I have to do. And then the fourth one, they're making fun of the whole thing, except for they weren't. They were trying to make it seem all cool, and then inadvertently parodying it by making him a godlike...
Yeah, jumping on jet fighters and stuff.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like... The first Die Hard, it was original. It was fun. It wasn't played out.
Yeah.
But Last Boy Scout is just a shrewd remake of Die Hard. It's the same exact thing. It's a different scenario, but the same exact character, same exact.
Well, you guys are missing the biggest point. It's a lot of fun when you're 12.
Yeah,
and that's when I first saw The Last Boy Scout, and it entertained me.
No, I think you're right because I think that he feels bad about it. It is almost ludicrous to have any sort of intellectual discussion on Last Boy Scout because it's made just as a
popcorn. I don't have an intellectual problem with it. I have a problem with Tony Scott. I have a problem with Bruce Willis's performance. I hate Damon Wayans.
This one didn't have the Kenny Loggins though. It had the
beyond this, the main question, who is the enigmatic singer from the opening credits?
I know, that's what I'm wondering. Is that Dee Snider?
No, I believe that guy's actually a director.
Is he?
Yes.
But porno?
It's probably Shane Black with a fake ponytail wig.
I think he directed Dark Blue.
Ron Shelton?
Ron Shelton? I don't think that was Ron Shelton. The guy who did Bull Durham.
Ron Shelton.
Yeah.
Bull Durham, Tin Cup.
Yeah, he does all the sports things.
Yeah.
And
football.
That's a tenuous link at best.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
We can look it up. One of our feudal listeners can look it up and email us at futilepodcast@gmail.com.
I do like the... The plot is basically built up of one scene after another of him getting detained by some toughs, and then they beat on him. He threatens them, then he kills them.
There's one other element in most of them, which is that they beat on him, and then he kind of says something funny to make him laugh. Then they all both share a good chuckle, and then mid chuckle he stabs.
He's
him
so
in
the funny. The villains start laughing at his really crude jokes.
Like that part early on where the guy is supposed to shoot, and he starts telling about his wife jokes.
Uh-huh.
And the guy like is genuinely enjoying it. He's really enjoying these jokes, and so much. That he's able to reach down. I mean, the guy looked away with the gun. He could have grabbed the gun, but instead he takes like 5 seconds to lean over and grab a shattered bottle and then go up and stab the guy.
You know, the problem is that watching these movies has made me think that if someone does hold me up, I'll probably try some similar thing and get killed.
But the thing is, those guys that are holding you up probably saw the movie too, so they probably play along.
I'll be like, "Yo, man, your mama's so fat." He's like, "What?"
Most likely.
Oh, Jesus. Last Boy Scout was definitely good, and I'd have to give it a 3.
Yeah.
I'd probably give it a 3. 3 out of 5.
I'm going to give it a 4 because it's just, I like if someone aims for the gutter and they do it well. Whatever you attempt to do, and if you do it well, I think this movie did exactly what it attempted to do.
I really enjoy one thing about the chauvinistic viewpoint in it, which is that his wife kind of makes a half-hearted attempt to explain her infidelity, but in reality, at the end, she's the one culpable for it, and she has to beg and plead for this jackass murdering...
horrible husband.
Terrible person who can't raise his daughter right. Like, oh, please, I'm so sorry that I cheated you for reasons that I tried to explain earlier but aren't really important because I'm the cheater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It had a morality to it, and it tried to get back to that.
The morality was, you know, like, no matter how terrible your marriage is to this miserable person, the second you cheat on it with his fat, lumpy, mustachioed...
MacGyver's friend. MacGyver's friend.
What was his name in MacGyver?
It's not Pete, and it sucks because I wish I could. Was it Mac?
Yeah, Pete's. No, Mac is MacGyver.
MacGyver.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about. I would actually be more insulted about that.
He's the guy who rides the motorcycle in Animal House.
He was the guy in the final episode of Quantum Leap.
I never watched the final episode.
It was a good one. So hey, you know what else I watched?
Did he get home?
He just keeps sleeping forever.
He sets right Al's situation so Al doesn't have to marry 500 women. He tells his wife that he's going to come back from the POW camp.
Is that my Al Borland?
No, I'm talking about Al.
Like Al and Ziggy?
I'm talking about Al and Ziggy.
Al and Ziggy. Because
we're talking about Quantum Leap, yeah. And then Al goes and kills himself with Cylons.
Oh my gosh, don't even joke about that. Cavill.
But yeah, speaking of connecting movies that shouldn't be connected, I was watching a little Event Horizon last night.
Nice.
Oh,
I love Jack Noseworthy.
My favorite scene there is the guy is floating, going, "Oh, motherfucker!
Oh yeah,
I'm coming back!"
Motherfuckers!
I was like, you know, that's what's so great about Paul Anderson is that he takes great premises for his movies.
Let's be clear, not Paul Thomas Anderson, but Paul
W.S.
I call PT Paul Anderson. Okay. He ruins every single one of his movies through horrible writing and horrible execution. But it's yeah, like, they're still entertaining because they are ideas.
It's like Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich or something.
Yeah, great atmosphere and great production.
I'd rather watch a Paul W.S. Anderson film than a Roland Emmerich.
I know.
I would too.
Oh, totally, because I enjoy Resident Evil. I enjoy Death Race. I enjoy Event Horizon.
I give him a pass just for Event Horizon.
You know, he's coming back to Resident Evil now.
Yeah, I heard.
And, you know, I was kind of disappointed he was no longer doing
Castlevania. I always enjoyed Mortal Kombat. I always enjoyed Mortal Kombat.
Grab Mortal Kombat.
I didn't really like Soldier. You always liked Soldier.
Soldier? I like Soldier?
Yeah.
Really?
I remember, gosh, you saw Soldier like 3 times.
I thought Soldier was
an okay movie.
You're making that up.
I'm not making it up. And then
I remember
your dad
that
wanted to see it, and you're like, yeah, I'll go see it again with you. And like, I was like, what are you going to go see again? And you're like, Soldier. And I was like, what? And you're like, yeah, it was good.
Because I remember hating that movie.
Okay.
It must be getting me confused with the kid with Down syndrome that I like Soldier.
Oh my god.
I like Down.
Anyway, yeah, the problem, I guess, with Event Horizon is that it tries to be one thing and then it kind of switches
there's
and
no
gets, problem with gets to the whole hell thing. But there's even with all those problems,
scary.
It's still the idea that poor Lawrence Fishburne is got sucked into hell at the end. And the idea that Jack Noseworthy did and then survived being spaced and then got rescued? The idea of what happens to those other people
seems interesting. The underlying idea of Event Horizon is what makes the movie. It has a great idea.
Yeah.
It's the unknown.
Kind of, yeah.
No, the idea is scary.
They ripped it off with Dead Space, that game
just
came out, and they just greenlit that to be a movie. And
I've heard
every
that.
Time I see it, I was like, it's Event Horizon. That's what all it is.
Because
except for there's zombies in it.
Yeah, because just the basic idea of Event Horizon about this other dimension that, you know, it's creepy. And then just, I think that's what I think make the best horror and sci-fi movies, to have some sort of disturbing otherworldly element.
I've seen this many times,
like,
you know, for as many horror films as I've seen, the one film that I've been most genuinely scared by the first time I saw it was Event Horizon. It really was.
It was scary, it's creepy now. Even if you watch it now, it's like, you don't want to, you know, watch
it. I laugh all the time.
I watched
it
alone, dark, yeah.
Was it alone with your door up and your doors? Did you lock your doors?
My doors open. I could hear the cougar running around outside. John Cougar Mellencamp. No, I mean, there are a couple of creepy elements. But,
Because what's the scariest movie either of you have seen?
Actual scariest?
Yeah.
Event Horizon, was that the one with
Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne in space?
Yeah.
With who?
Sam Neill, Lawrence Fishburne.
Right, Sam, right.
It's how Morpheus gets out of the Matrix, actually.
As it,
he's in the world of that version of the Matrix, and then he gets sucked through in the black hole, and he wakes up, and then Cypher is there, and Cypher's like, "How you doing, Chief?"
Well, if you watch like the Blair Witch Project, the first time you see it, it is somewhat of a creepy movie because
creepy, but I wasn't.
It's like you're terrified, but just it's the element of unknown.
What was that one with Caruso, Section 9 or
Session 9?
That one had some pretty creepy.
My favorite.
I mean, I'm more effectively creeped out than scared by
it's psychological.
A movie. I was actually like scared by Event Horizon when I first saw it. I was like 15.
My favorite line.
I saw it in the theater and I was like,
yeah,
my skin was crawling by in certain parts of it. And I was like, oh man, this is just great. But generally, if I'm creeped out by something, I'm like, you know, this thing did its job totally. And it's generally like a John Carpenter film or something like that.
Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, Session 9 has some genuinely creepy.
Session 9 for
the
sure.
The part where. With the guys alone in the asylum at night.
I love it, but
the underlying. I love the final line of that movie where you hear the ghost that possesses.
Yeah.
You know, the person asks him where the ghost lives, and he's like, "I live in the weak and the wounded."
Yeah,
I just love that idea.
Yeah,
but he basically prays.
Well,
upon
what I don't like is that guy made the same movie twice in a row when he made The Machinist.
Yeah, The Machinist is kind of weak. You know, he just did one called Trans-Siberian, which is kind
of
weak.
Oh, I just watched Trans-Siberian.
It's okay.
I posted a review for it.
Yeah,
I was unimpressed with it.
Yeah, it's okay. Session 9 is his best movie because it just... Session 9, you know, for a mainstream audience, it's kind of confusing for a lot of people, but to me it was very clear what happened in it. But it's just... I always find the idea of, like, possession and someone losing their mind scary, so...
No, definitely. Psychological thriller stuff, I think.
Yeah, because it's not really gore that is
scary. No, actually, another one that
really did kind of creep me out for some time, so it was Jacob's Ladder.
Jacob's Ladder is definitely a high end, because then you get to the whole idea. What's scary about that is that the ending, where just the idea that, well, what if at the last moments of death you're just having a horrific nightmare right before you turn off, and then that's essentially... the last thing you experience.
Whenever I have nightmares, I'll always like find myself wanting to wake up. I don't know if you have that sensation. Yeah. It's like you kind of you keep hoping during a nightmare that you're going to wake up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's there's something about that. That's probably what the original inspiration for that was.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Jacob's Ladder, you know.
It's, no, there's been some good scary ones. I mean, I just watched wasn't really scary, but it kind of creeped me out. Shiver, I forgot what it is. The Cronenberg.
The first Cronenberg. Oh, yeah, yeah, it is kind of creepy, yeah.
Talked about it.
Well, the Fly is actually somewhat creepy, too.
Yeah, The Fly creeped me out, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is I get creeped out by stuff, and I generally think that's effective.
Definitely.
Well, it's just a scary, it's just the, I mean, it's an imaginative, scary prompt. That's where it just, I don't know, that's what is the challenge in horror, because there's so much garbage out there that's just not scary. It's astounding as how popular the genre is now, how few movies actually succeed in making anything even remotely
scary. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to just like basic stuff, you know, like people are afraid of small places, of being trapped, of those sorts of things, so you know, you kind of have to put all those in there.
Well, because like a monster, you know, like the typical thing
when you're a kid, monster movies will work better because just you aren't as aware of all of that stuff. But I mean, but even then, as a kid, like when monster movies were effective to me, something like Alien wasn't so much a scary movie as it was like a suspenseful movie. You know, like your heart's intense and you're following, but it's so much more action. Even just the first Alien, obviously Aliens is pure action, is much more light in terms of its horror element. But
it's a shame Seth's not here with the Tommyknockers.
Oh yeah,
Tommyknockers. Had to bring
that one. Well, yeah, of course, the first scene of it.
Yeah, with the clown.
Oh, float.
Yeah.
You know, float, I finally watched that for the first time. Like
the movie itself sucks, but the first scene with the clown
that's
is creepy.
Yeah, because the idea of somebody being down there.
Yeah, like, it's just creepy. He pops in the gutter, and you know, it pops out. You can see it. It's disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
Oh, shit. What's
Pennywise.
That guy's name?
Yeah.
Tim Curry.
It's Curry. Disturbing.
I thought he was excellent.
He was the, in Legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, The Shining. The Shining has its scary moments too.
Oh, definitely. The Shining. It's some creepy stuff.
Well, you know, one story that always really got me, and it's the psychological. Now that we're on Stephen King, is Pet Sematary.
That is a creepy story too. It could have been the movie's kind of a joke, but they should actually remake it. That is definitely
Fred
Gwynne for remake.
I thought Fred Gwynne was awesome.
There's also a Stephen King story called The Jaunt, which is really creepy.
Oh, right. That
it could be.
Why was so upset with Mist?
Yeah,
and that was out of the same book.
The story of the Mist is actually very, very creepy. But the Jaunt, I don't know if have you guys read the Jaunt?
No,
it's about a machine that you know basically teleports you across vast distances. But if they find out that if you're awake, if you awake when you go through the Jaunt, your mind even though you instantly travel across time, your mind perceives that it's been awake for all the time it would take to travel across that. So you would come out at the other end of the Jaunt like you've been awake for a billion years.
Oh, wow.
And so you come out insane because you've been in this white void or whatever for a billion years. And so you pull out your eyes and go crazy.
Nice.
You come out the Jaunt.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's like the worst episodes of Sesame Street.
Or like Event Horizon.
Stephen King. I can see you're scared right now.
I'm frightened to death, man. You can see the small dribble of piss.
that in the last book of short stories he did called After Sunset, I think.
Yeah, I've read it.
Oh, you did read it?
I've read After
Sunset.
Remember
the story that, it was towards the end, and it was this guy, it all starts out this sort of investigation, family members concerned, but it mainly surrounds the shrink who had a patient.
Yeah.
I think it was 8 stones or 9 stones, something like that, out in this field.
Hmm.
Did you read that one?
I don't know if I read that one.
It was towards the end of the book. And the shrink has this patient, and the guy is just totally getting obsessive compulsive, and it surrounds him going out, taking pictures, and he comes across this field. And these 8 or 9 stones, I can't remember now, are sort of this portal out in this field to, like, this other dimension. And he keeps imagining that if one of the stones disappears, that I'll open this door and all this shit will come out. Kind of like sort of the shit from the Mist.
Yeah.
So he feels like he has to keep going out there and checking to make sure all the stones are there. And sometimes one of the stones will sort of shift a little bit or it'll just sort of haze in and out. But is this really crazy just how wrecked and all these people end up killing themselves and somebody else gets interested, goes out there, just gets totally obsessed with the same fucking thing, right. And it just follows the person cycle, after person. Right. They feel like they have to make sure that that stone's there, otherwise the world won't. And, it was the one really creepy story in the book.
Obsession is another good thing for psychological thriller. I mean, obviously, yeah.
And it would just get worse and worse and worse until...
Like the movie Obsessed with the Beyonce.
Like Creep, we're talking Creep about Show is one of the most scary. That's part of the scary. Oh my
god, that was so funny.
Part
shit.
Two, Creep Show Part Two. I love Stephen King.
Stephen King with the moss, the creepy yeah. moss. I think that was the first
blows,
one.
Blows his moss.
Wasn't Leslie Nielsen? Who the fuck?
He was in it. He was in the one about the
wife.
Yeah, the guy killing his wife, basically.
And then Adrian Barbeau gets fed to the monster. That's great.
Yeah. The one I thought was the creepiest, but it was also almost the stupidest, was when the lady. Hits the bum.
Yeah, easy.
And
God's change, lady.
Yeah, he kept saying, "Lady, can I have a ride?"
And he keeps coming
and then
back.
She keeps just like she eventually just demolishes her car, trying to kill him because she thinks she runs this over guy over, and she feels terrible. And then she keeps going, and the guy's like, she sees
what
the guy.
What was this from?
Creepshow 2. And
what story was that?
And eventually
the first
she.
One, I think.
Eventually she. No, I think it was at the end.
Do you remember the name of the story?
No.
Or the,
but she.
I don't remember
she
a
just
short story like
demolishes
that.
Her car, just destroys it in order to kill. Like, this guy is smashed to bits. His face is gone by the time it's done. And she finally gets into her garage and she locks the garage door and gets out. And the guy comes crawling up over the hood. Like, like his corpse. Like, and he keeps going. Thanks for the ride, lady.
it's just awesome. Like, it's never scary.
No,
it was
that stuff
funny.
Is funny.
No, most of them were pretty funny.
And there was that one on the raft.
That was just such a gory story.
Yeah, people manging on the raft, and then there's some sort of like muck in this lake that goes up through the rafters on the raft and like. I don't know, kills those.
It's really like an environmental statement.
Yeah. It was like directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
Well, I remember this one part. I mean, of course, I was reading this shit like in junior high. And he's banging. Well, his girlfriend and I think his best friend both already got killed, and he's banging his best friend's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's
it. Was that the Creepshow 2 was the same.
Yeah, it was the raft.
And it created,
but when I
read
the story,
yeah.
I never
yeah.
saw Creepshow 2. I've only seen the first one.
But two,
yeah.
There's
her
one,
hair.
One,
and
he's
like,
I beat you.
Gets into her hair
yeah.
and shit.
I beat you, yeah.
But the descriptions in the book of how this shit would eat you was just, I mean, it just
yeah.
fucking...
Yeah. At the end of that bit is the funny part, because the guy makes it back to shore, and he screams, I beat you, and it just jumps out of the lake and like, lands on top of him.
I can't remember what happened in the story.
Yeah, they always say the end stuff differently in the books. There was the first one in the Creepshow 2 was really dumb. It was the general store Indian, the Indian statue in
yeah.
front of the store killing people.
Yeah,
it was lame. I thought that was
the old dude,
in it.
Freaking Marshall. Oh shit!
The guy who had the bugs start pouring out.
E.G. Marshall, isn't that his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, with the yeah, he was totally paranoid.
The bugs. Yeah.
Was he the president in Superman 2? Because E.G. Marshall was the president in Superman 2.
What else was he? You remember he was he was the dad. He was Beverly D'Angelo's dad in Christmas Vacation.
I never saw Christmas Vacation.
You haven't seen Christmas Vacation? Ian.
I'm pretty sure it was E.G.
You just repeatedly fail yourself.
I guess I'm not going to win.
I can't remember Superman 2. I remember the bad guys coming back and all that shit.
I remember somebody getting thrown into a
Phantom Zone.
A Phantom Zone, yeah, and they toss him into space.
Mm-hmm. That's actually how it starts.
And there's some dumb stuff about him taking the ass off his shirt. And
yeah, he throws that. That's weird.
That's retarded.
It is. There's a couple stupid things. Mario Puzo.
Yeah. He wrote it.
He
wrote
never the script. Really could write worth a shit. And they were going to do a fourth one too, but then he died.
Somebody wrote it.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote it. Somebody finished it.
Really? Yeah. That's probably a good thing, because Coppola's been. I don't know if you've seen his latest movies.
The one with what's his name?
There was the Tim Roth one that he just did another one.
That
too.
Was Youth Without Youth, and then he had the new one. It was called with the T. What's it called?
D-Bags?
Oh, no, it's two. It's all black and white and, yeah. With the Vincent Gallo.
Yes, it's some black color.
And red, white and red all over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
it's Tosca.
It's like Testo, something like that.
Yeah.
Testes.
Testicles. It didn't do very well.
Gross. But every time I see him, I just think of
the blowjob scenes. Brown Bunny.
Freeway 2.
Freeway 2. Oh, he little children.
Yeah. And he tucks his dick between his legs.
Yeah.
And does this creepy thing. He's the witch, and he keeps burning people. And, oh, man.
What was the voice he does? You can do the voice.
I don't remember it.
It's a high-pitched voice.
Yeah, it was just high-pitched. I don't remember it.
Hey, look at little children.
Yeah, it was really creepy. That was a creepy movie, man.
Yeah.
That's a movie you should watch before going to bed again.
Yeah.
Freeway 2.
Confessions of a Trick Daddy.
Confessions of a Trick Daddy. Yeah. Trick Baby.
The first one, the one with
Reese Witherspoon and Kiefer.
Yeah.
Right, so what's the second one after?
My favorite line from the first...
It's just more fairy tales that have been put into...
My favorite line from the first one is when Reese Witherspoon, some guy is like, I don't like that you're holding me hostage. He's like, well, I don't like sucking strange dick.
But I do it anyway.
Yeah. It's good.
I think she's tedious.
You don't like Reese, man?
Not really, no.
What else?
Because I don't.
Okay. Wait, so you're saying you like Lulu Blonde 2 more than 1?
I'm saying I didn't like either of those movies.
Nah, you probably don't.
Walk the Line?
The director of Legally Blonde directed The Ugly Truth, Robert Hittick.
Is that Kristen saying, where are you at?
Kristen wants an ETA.
Oh, of course.
Just trying to get some action.
Why don't you just tell her that your balls are already there? I hope she did. She always leaves it on the counter in the
minute. She wants an excuse to come back and see you.
She wants to know what?
An excuse to come back and see you overnight. Oh, man, sorry, I didn't realize you were naked.
Oh my gosh.
Funny enough,
I'm a sweat after your workout.
I have a roommate who's so asexual that I told my girlfriend, I'll be honest, you could be in bed naked with him, I would have no concern.
Interrupt, right? There'll be a shower scene. I'll walk in front of him.
Oh my god.
Love those shower scenes.
What did you walk in front of him for?
Star Trek.
In which part?
No, he showed up.
The very beginning.
He showed up late and then stood there by me, and I'm like, well, sit the fuck down. And then he went and pouted and was about to leave, so I had to get up and go get him like he was a 2-year-old child. Bring him back to his seat. Escort him to his seat.
And then you walk in front of him and stood there for a second?
No, then he sat down.
Oh. Did you guys like Star Trek?
I did a lot.
I was standing by him so I could get by his fucking legs. He flips out on me, and I was already having a bad morning.
Yeah, because he's always having a bad morning. So,
Ian, come on. You have bad mornings every day.
Yeah, if I don't put it on other people.
Yeah, you do. Every human interaction with you is you projecting.
Oh, I'm sure.